our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
Exopolitics, paranormal phenomena, and deep analysis of current world events. From somewhere in the desert, between Area 51 and Roswell, blasting across the planet, the Manticore Network proudly presents Veritas, because the truth will set you free.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
It was too fast to be an airplane.
I think it's time to open the books on the question of government investigations of UFOs. We ought to do it really because it's right. We ought to do it because the American people, quite frankly, can handle the truth. And we ought to do it because it's the law.
Be skeptical. Do be as skeptical as you want, but by all, don't close your mind.
Greetings to everyone around the world and a warm welcome to another edition of the Veritas Show, where you listen because you don't want to believe, you listen because you want to know. I'm your host, Mel Fabregas, and I sincerely thank you for tuning in once again. This is episode number 22. And you may wonder what happened to episode 21. Well, what happened was we received so many emails from people asking about Cliff High that we decided to extract Cliff High's segments from David Sarita and Catherine Austin Fitz's show and put it all into one show. So there you go, Cliff, if you're listening. You were a great guest, and the audience wanted more, and we decided to put a show just for you. Tonight's special guest is James Fox. He will discuss his experience in the field and his new movie, I Know What I Saw. If you saw Out of the Blue, I hear from James he has included great footage, witnesses, and has added more experts in the production of this film. Incidentally, we almost had to cancel this show. You see, James is on the last production step of his film, which has taken him 4 years to complete. He didn't realize the interview was today, and he was working with editors at a film studio and asked me if I could cancel. Well, since I had been announcing it for so long and many of you want to listen to him, we came up with a sensible solution. Instead of a two-hour show, he agreed to a one-hour show, which I think is fair. And James will be with us shortly. The Veritas Show is syndicated by the following affiliates: K-Rock's Zero Point Radio, the Black Vault Radio Network, and the Paranormal Radio Network, UPRN 105.8 FM, New Orleans. You can listen to The Veritas Show on iTunes and RSS feeds throughout cyberspace. And if you listen through iTunes, please remember to rate us and leave feedback. We are heard in 122 countries. Next week's special guest is Dr. Fred Bell, NASA rocket scientist, inventor, healer, musician, author, naturopath, and much more. He will discuss NASA, the moon, weather manipulation, Project Bluebeam, his contacts with extraterrestrials, FEMA camps, and so much more. And now, I want to take an opportunity to look back at the past and also to the future. What was meant to be a recorded telephone call between Milton Torres and I back in December of 2008 has turned into something that I did not expect. It has massively exceeded my expectations as it relates to the response I have received from those of you who have honored me by listening around the world. In such a short amount of time, I have had the privilege of interviewing some of the best personalities in multiple fields. From the beginning, I shared with you the fact that I'm not an expert on anything. However, I can talk about many subjects. I sit behind the chair and the microphone as a bridge between you and the guest, as your liaison to the guests, nothing more. I have produced this show on my day off, taking time from my business and family. You could say I have not taken a day off since I started back in December. That's perfectly fine. I enjoyed every minute of it. However, I have a plethora of limitations that prevent me from reaching the show's full potential. Have you ever found a task or activity you liked and wonder if that could be all you did because you enjoyed it so much? Did you ever wonder if it could be your career? If I had all the time and money in the world, I would do this for free all the time, as my true passion lies here. But the reality is that I do not have all the time or the financial resources. I love doing the show and I hope it shows, but I cannot continue forever with the current format, as I'm not doing the show, the guest, and the audience the justice that they deserve. I would like to have the freedom to focus on the show, make it better, and expand it into something really great. That is why I'm taking the next step and wanted you to hear it first. First, how could I free myself from my other responsibilities without jeopardizing them? How could I make this a career and actually investigate and interview in person? Yes, a career change. How could I improve the format and offer more than what I have been able to offer you? It all boils down to one thing: resources. Many of you have been kind enough in supporting this project, and I wholeheartedly thank you. But in order to create more value and dedicate myself to this, I had to take the following step, and at the same time being cognizant and sensitive to the audience. Effective today, I have made the decision to implement a subscription service for Veritas. How will it work, you ask? Each show will be divided into two parts. The first part will be available to everyone, and the second part will be available to our members only. That way, potential subscribers can listen and make an informed decision if they wish to subscribe. Again, I took many variables into consideration in order to come up with a sensible figure that made sense to you and to the project. The subscription will cost $15.95. That's $15.95 US dollars for a 3-month period. And it self-renews, so you don't have to worry about renewing all the time. You can cancel at any time. Although I expect to have one show per week, I have to give myself the flexibility in case of an emergency, a guest canceling at the last minute, holidays, etc. That is why I'm proposing to produce 48 shows per year, at least. If you calculate that on a per show basis, it comes up to $133 US dollars per show. How much do you pay these days for a movie ticket? Where I'm at, it's close to $10. My goal is to continue gauging what the audience wants and will continue looking for the best of the best to interview. Take Pane Astral Walker Andov as an example. He had never been interviewed before and we took the chance and we have received so much praise for his interview. The same with Robert Morning Sky. He had not granted an interview for 10 years and he accepted ours. It goes to show you that the Veritas system and movement is working, and by making this change, it can only get us so much closer to the truth. If you were going to conduct an expedition, would you go with 10% of the necessary equipment? That is the analogy I like to use. With the new format, I will be able to potentially conduct, quote-unquote, our expedition with the necessary equipment to succeed. I actually have many plans to take this show higher and higher. How would you like it if I could sit down with a Hopi elder and interview him or her with a camera while staying with them at their tribe? How would you like it if I could afford the newest generation of infrared camera to show you what we could see in our skies so that I can share it with you also? In addition, I have done extensive benchmarking and found that other projects charge for their membership and their forums. Take, for example, Project Avalon and Enterprise Mission. I don't want to charge for our forum. However, I will include it as a bonus to the Veritas subscribers. In other words, in order to maintain your membership there, you have to be a subscriber to the Veritas show. This will accomplish many things. It will stop the spammers, it will increase participation, and prevent those who drop by once and never come back. We want to create a true community, and at the same time create a sense of value. Just so that you know, the PDF files that I posted recently from Clifford Stone, Einstein, Von Braun, and Tesla exceeded our bandwidth limitations. So the subscription is imperative right now. To subscribe, simply head on to our website, veritasshow.com, and click on the subscribe button. It's very easy. It only takes a few seconds, and we've chosen PayPal, which is the internationally recognized payment clearinghouse. So nobody should have a problem signing on and getting your membership immediately. As of today, there are two players, two MP3 players, that is. One is available to everyone and plays the first portion of each show, and there is an additional player inside the members section that plays both segments. In the next few days, I will have a download feature for the premium files, so you can download them and put them onto your mobile player. Now, podcasts and iTunes will only offer the first segment, and once I include the links to part two for each guest, you'll be able to download the files as a member. I want to thank you for being part of this growing community, and I hope I can count on you, as I want this to be my new career, and dedicate the time and the resources so that the Veritas movement can truly turn into what it's meant to be. I apologize for the long message, but I wanted to be as transparent as possible. Thank you. And now to some headlines and to this week's forum question. What life might look like on Jupiter's Europa. New extreme species discovered. Clinton's UFO speech in Hong Kong, September the 14th, 2005. And by the way, this was submitted to me by Grant Cameron. Thanks, Grant. Famed UFO historian. Humanity may be targeted by predatory reptilian extraterrestrial species. Leaked agenda. Bilderberg Group plans economic depression. Rupert Murdoch. Internet will soon be over. Evidence shows 9/11 false flag operation may have been a hyperdimensional ET event. And Discovery of Life on Mars by Andrew Basiago, chosen number one UFO story of 2008. And by the way, I heard Andrew speak with Alfred Weber on his Exopolitics radio show, and I was floored by it. I contacted Alfred, and he put me in touch with Andrew Basiago, so hopefully we'll have him in the future. And like the late Paul Harvey said, go to the blog for the rest of the story. And as you know, I like to make things interactive between you and I. And this week's forum question is, if you could ask a question to a more advanced and more evolved being, an extraterrestrial, in order to learn more and improve things on Earth, what would you ask? What would be the one question that you would ask? You can answer this question on our forum. Just head to our website, veritasshow.com, and click on forum, or go to manticore.com. And remember, if you register soon, anyone who's registered needs to be a subscriber of the Veritas Show in order to keep the membership there active. And now, get ready to spend some time with one successful UFO documentary filmmaker, James Fox. He's going to talk to us about his new film, I Know What I Saw, which changed name from Beyond the Blue to I Know What I Saw, and what he's gone through in the last few years while filming this new great documentary. This is Mel Fabregas, and you're listening to The Veritas Show. Don't go anywhere. James Fox, was born in England and raised in America by his father, Charles Fox, who wrote for newspapers and magazines like Rolling Stone, Playboy, Harper's, and the Catholic Digest. When James was 3 years old, his father was struck with multiple sclerosis. For many years, James assisted his father as he traveled to locations for news stories. They conducted interviews with people ranging from theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking for Esquire to race car driver Dan Gurney for Car and Driver. After completing 2 years of education in Paris at the Sorbonne, James moved to San Francisco. He attended San Francisco State University, where he finished his degree in French. James was very skeptical when a close friend first introduced him to the field of UFOs in 1993. However, when a reliable acquaintance corroborated the first story, James began to investigate. In 1998, he completed and sold his first major documentary, UFOs, 50 Years of Denial, to the Discovery Channel. It included such notables as Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell and the late Colonel Philip J. Corso, who was in charge of the Foreign Technology Desk at the Pentagon during the Eisenhower administration. The success of UFOs 50 Years of Denial has led James to travel around the world for years in pursuit of further evidence. For his film Out of the Blue, James interviewed witnesses including President Gerald Ford, Mercury astronaut Gordon Cooper, cosmonaut Pavel Popovich in Star City, Russia, and five-star admiral Lord Hill Norton in England. He has a new film coming out called I Know What I Saw. His passions are photography, bicycling, motorcycles, traveling, and seeking the truth. And directly from San Francisco, California, James Fox. Hello, James, and welcome to the Veritas Show. How are you?
Great. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Thank you. James, a lot of stuff going on. You just came back from vacation just to come back and finish the editing process of your new film, I Know What I Saw. But as our listeners know, whenever we have a new guest on, we want to learn more about you, your background, and what made you focus so passionately as a successful UFO documentary filmmaker. I read somewhere that you never thought much about UFOs until a visit years ago to Nevada, when you and your friends watched a saucer-shaped object hover silently in the sky, then it went away. When you got home, you were met with laughter. No one believed you, even your family. You thought, if my own family doesn't believe me, who does? Tell us more about this and how it changed your life.
Well, the event itself wasn't so much the... didn't propel me to make a film about UFOs, but it did spark an interest, and it also a curiosity as to why even my own family members wouldn't believe what I said I'd seen. I wasn't saying it was of extraterrestrial origin. I just said, look, this is what I saw, and it defied an explanation. But it was interesting, that sort of knee-jerk response. I mean, it was, nobody believed me. Everybody laughed, quite honestly. Funny thing was is that I had a very good friend of mine for years, since I was at a very early age, and he is a pilot. He's about 15 years older than me, and he had told me in the 80s about a sighting that he had had. I didn't laugh at him, but I didn't really think much of it, really. But I called him after I had my sighting years later, and I said, hey, remember that sighting you were telling me about? He said, yeah. I said, tell me more about that. He said, well, what's the sudden interest all about? I said, well, I think I saw something too, he ended up being actually in one of my earlier films, 50 Years of Denial. But
right.
That's one of the things that I focus on more than anything else, because I have experienced it firsthand, and that's the credibility aspect of the phenomenon. And I've had people in the UFO community, and I include myself in that, get on me a little bit because I don't take the whole subject to another level. But my philosophy is let's try and penetrate a much larger, broader audience on this and really try to get things done. And so that's ultimately what I believe we've achieved with Out of the Blue, and this film I feel like this film is 10 times what Out of the Blue ever was.
The new film's called I Know What I Saw. Many people email me saying, Mel, are you sure? They think it's called Beyond the Blue, and I know at one point that was going to be the name. What made you change the name?
Well, I always described it as a working title. I was never 100% happy with it, Beyond the Blue, but I had to call it something.
Right.
And the association with Out of the Blue was one. And two, I kept saying, you know, I know the right name's going to come, and I kept hearing these witnesses over and over in different countries, states, saying, look, you know, I know what I saw. Don't try to tell me what I saw. And I thought, oh, that's a reoccurring theme, reoccurring statement, and I kind of had a nice ring to it. And so just a couple months ago, we decided to call the film I Know What I Saw. And I actually ran it by a few people, and they all loved it. And I actually called some people at CNN. I said, what do you guys think of this title? And they said, it's great. Let's go with it. So that's what it is.
I think it's great. Whenever you talk to somebody, that's the first thing they tell you when you doubt. No, I know what I saw. That's what they tell you. James, what is the UFO case that most interests you?
In the movie?
No, in your experience throughout life. Anything you've investigated?
Gosh, I would have to say the Bentwaters incident. Just because how many cases, well, first of all, I've spent 12 years investigating it and meeting the different witnesses. I've brought witnesses together for the first time, and there are more witnesses together in this film about the Bentwaters incident than any other film I've ever seen. And how often do you hear about a guy who actually sits with a UFO on the ground with someone else, touches it, photographs it, writes symbols, you know, etches the symbols that were on the craft? I mean, that's just, to me, that's just amazing. And funny enough, I can kind of gauge it by my online editor, Boris. His wife would, for years, she would sort of listen in the background as we're editing, and she was never paying much attention to any of it. And when Peniston, the interview I got with Peniston and John Burroughs, talked about sitting with the craft and touching the craft, she suddenly comes over and says, what? Somebody actually touched it? You know, and so that's sort of, that case I find very, very, very impressive.
And here's a case that never goes away, the 1997 UFO case, better known as the Phoenix Lights. After more than a decade, it seems you've explored that case even more and uncovered new data that you have integrated into your new film. Tell us what that new data is.
Well, I got very close to, I don't know how much you want me to elaborate on this, but last year we had a rough cut done of the film. And we'd gotten, as you know, the governor, which I thought I had a snowball's chance in hell, to come forward. And,
right.
And he had he explained to me just recently that he had no intentions when I initially had set up an interview with him to admit that he himself had seen the UFO. He was only going to talk about why he did what he did with the at the press conference where he had to be dressed up in an alien suit, just to kind of curb the growing hysteria. But I had played a tape-recorded message from one of his former constituents as well as a witness to the event, Stacy Rhodes, who was quite upset 10 years later about why he did what he did, and he decided on the spot to come forward. But in any case, about a year ago, I'm going down the Grand Canyon filming a piece on a conservationist, this guy named Martin Litton, who helped save the canyon from dams and whatnot. I'm going down in this old wooden dories with cameras, and it's a great trip, 3 weeks long. And I meet this guy. He says he's from Wickenburg, older guy on the trip. And I said, oh, interesting. You know, we get to talking. We're on the river for several weeks. And I said, oh, Wickenburg. Oh, gosh. I'm thinking to myself, Wickenburg. God, I know Wickenburg. I said, how long have you been? He said, about 25, 30 years. I said, well, were you there in 97? He said, yeah. You didn't by any chance see that UFO? He said, oh, my God, did I ever. He said, my whole family and I watched it. And I took out my video camera and filmed it. So long story short, because of that meeting with him, I tried to put the film on hold to get a hold of some footage, of this particular footage. I never managed to do that, but interestingly enough, as a result of that waiting period, I came across a bunch of other additional material, some of which came from Senator McCain. I went into Frances Barwood's very, very, very kind of her to open up her archives to me recently.
And I want to talk about Frances, because she's one of those people that has not gotten the credit that she deserves. But go ahead.
You know, I'd like to get her a public apology from the governor, which I'm going to do that. I've actually talked to him about that, because he kind of let her hang out to dry.
Yes.
And he's realizing that now. And I'm going to have him call her, and I've discussed it with him, and he owes her that much. But in any case, we came across some amazing, you know, Senator McCain actually did, as well as the governor of Arizona, did actually try to determine the origin of that craft, and they were unsuccessful with, they were, you know, the governor was sent to different places, they all sort of shrugged their shoulders, and McCain had made inquiries, written inquiries, and we have all those written inquiries, and we feature them in the movie, but he got the runaround. He got
right.
He got sent to the National Archives. National Archives said, we don't do this. Then he got sent to the Air Force. Department of the Air Force came back and said, we don't investigate UFOs since Blue Book termination in 69. And it was his runaround. And then we got a little brief interview, radio interview, that was done with them in 97 that we included along with the paper trail. So it's interesting, some new developments. And I'm sure McCain will be dragged into this whole thing very shortly. As soon as this movie comes out, he's not going to be able to escape it.
Well, if it's dragged, at least he's going to be dragged after the election, not before. That would have been detrimental, I think, to him if he ever did before the election.
Well, Senator, the Governor Fife and I had discussed that, because I did a show, a Larry King show, and I actually had a letter from him at that point. And Governor and I talked about it, and he said, you know, we should hold out, and we decided to hold out because that wouldn't have been fair, so we did.
James, there's one person, we mentioned her, that I don't believe gets the credit that she truly deserves, and of course I'm referring to Councilwoman, or former Councilwoman, Frances Barwood. To me, she's the Angela Joyner of the case. She didn't care to be ridiculed or scorned, and she received over 700 calls from people, and every time she tried to investigate it further, she was ridiculed as a UFO council member. I've heard you've interacted with her. Tell us more about what you've accomplished lately. I think you've uncovered some information from the records that she kept.
It's really unfortunate. I mean, she did an interview in 97, which I actually almost put in the movie, but it was someone saying, is this political suicide? And she said, yeah, very well, might be. But, you know, we shouldn't let this get in the way of an investigation. And she was not shouting from the hills, E.T. She just said, hey, people said they saw things from all across the state. They deserve at least an effort of an explanation. And she was the only one willing, and I actually make that distinction in this version of the film, to do something. And ultimately, it cost her political career. It's very unfortunate, but I think this film helps redeem her. She just, for the first time in 12 years, 11, 12 years, for me, took out boxes of stuff from when she was councilwoman, and she was also vice mayor, I believe, of Phoenix for me. And we spent a long time sifting through, my gosh, I mean, so many tapes. I had to actually buy a second little tape recorder because the first one I got broke. We had to rush out into the local Radio Shack up where she lives in Dewey, Arizona,
right,
and get a second one and just comb through all these different interviews and tapes and news reports and. But we uncovered some real, real gems, and I'm very, very grateful to her. And I hope this film, sets the record straight with that, because it's quite unfortunate. She is one of the very, very few people willing to put her neck out, and it really cost her career.
Absolutely. And you mentioned former Governor Fife Symington. I sometimes wonder who gave him the script for what that press release, the alien that came out, something that he came up with, or is that something that he was instructed to do? Did you ever ask him that?
Oh, definitely. And I said, look, come on, you know, just the two of us hanging out. I said,
right.
You know, I said, did you get a phone call? And he adamantly, he insists that it was something he did because of the growing hysteria. And I'd have to say, I have to, you know, it seems highly unlikely that that's entirely the case, but I have to take his word for it. That's what he said happened. It's just interesting what was going on with his life at the time and everything else, but that's what he sticks by. So, And, you know, whatever happened, the fact that he's coming forward and he's willing to go on tour and help promote this film, and some other interesting things that has happened recently. I don't know if I've shared this with anyone or not, but are you familiar with the band Blink 182?
Yes, of course. And one of the members, he almost died at that airplane crash, right?
Yes, exactly.
And Travis Barker, you mean?
Yeah, well, the other guy I'm working with, I've been doing some work with, is Tom DeLonge.
Okay,
and,
yes.
And we actually had a screening of a rough cut a couple of months ago. We needed about another $100,000 for post-production. And I had a screening, and CNN had invited him along. And he was introduced to me, and he said, "Hey, how can I help?" And I kind of told him what I needed, and he said, "Well, I've got a full post-production facility because we do all MTV videos. Bring it down to me, and we'll set you up." He's got, you know, high-end microphones, sound booth, mix boards, all that stuff. So I lived down in San Diego for the last several months and when working with those guys every day. And they just did amazing work on the film, and it looks so good. I'm so proud of it. I really am. I can't imagine how this film is not going to have a big impact, because it's so. And I'm not trying to toot my own horn. And we've all been working very hard on it. It just oozes credibility.
Well, you should toot your own horn, because if it's as good as Out of the Blue, then my friend, you should definitely brag about it.
Well, everyone who's seen it has seen Out of the Blue, and they all say this is 10 times, 50 times, 100 times better than Out of the Blue. Now, these are very skeptical people that I've shown this to. And one guy was a professor at some prestigious university back east, and I actually showed it to him in South America, and he was he was cracking jokes about it the whole time. And we had a big screening with my sister's house in Cuenca, Ecuador, about 17 people, and he was sitting on the edge of his seat the whole time. I kept looking over at him, and he was just like, it really, really caused him to question his beliefs. And he kind of looked at me in the end, and he said, "Wow, I think this film's going to do really well." So, I'm very excited about it. You know, I'm very excited about it. Everyone seems to be giving me a slightly different opinion as to what venue would be best. So that'll be interesting to see what happens there. We're going to start some promotions in July. And the film is going out to a number of very big executives on Monday. And we'll see what happens.
Well, I think it's going to do great. James, I've spoken to a number of investigators in the past few months, and I sometimes detect a feeling of exhaustion after trying so many years to get answers without much success. You seem to be a different case. You keep going and going and get more passionate about this all the time. What motivates you? What's the drive that keeps you going?
Well, I tell you, I have to be honest with you, I'm pretty much at the end of my rope right now, because this whole thing started... I had no intentions of doing a follow-up piece for Out of the Blue, although my goal always was to create the definitive investigation or film on the subject, and I felt we got close to doing that. And when I say that, I don't necessarily mean like, hey, you know, I've got all the best evidence or I've got all the best cases. I mean, there's how much evidence does one really need at the end of the day to know that there's a lot more to this phenomenon than swamp gas and hot air balloons. So we set out to revamp Out of the Blue, I think it was in 2006. Remember, I sold Out of the Blue to Universal and it aired on Sci-Fi in 2003, and we did some international stuff with it as well. But then I kind of moved on and I was working on alternative energy film. But in 2006, I received a letter from Universal stating they were not going to renew the broadcast option. And so I sort of planted the seed in the back of my mind that perhaps I would kind of revamp it a little bit. And, you know, because I'd run out of steam in 2003, and then 2006 I thought, hey, you know, there's some interviews I never got and I'd like to get. And I got a little bit more credibility now with that film coming out, and I want a little more access to people, and maybe I'll just do that. So I did. And that's when we broke the Five Simons story and got some additional stuff for the Van Waters case and et cetera, furthermore, and henceforth. But... And I was just going to sell the movie at that point, was it 2007, 2008, move on. And we did some national news coverage, quite a bit of national news coverage and international news coverage, and I got an agent who was representing me, and he said, God, you know, this is just an amazing film. And I thought, yeah, isn't it great? Let's sell it. You know, he goes, no, you know, I think with a little bit more work, you could really have an incredible piece. I remember looking at the guy thinking, I don't know if I've got it in me, you know.
Right.
So I ended up having to buy out my two co-producers because they were exhausted at that point. I think that was 2007. And keep pushing forward. And I pushed forward for two more years. And I can honestly tell you right now that I'm just about done right now.
So exhaustion, definitely something that happens to every researcher. And I hope that when this movie comes out, it's successful and you keep going. James, while talking with Stephen Bassett and Nick Pope, I mentioned the fact I thought the media was getting a bit more serious about the topic. But I can't help but notice how they still have the giggle factor whenever this topic is discussed. However, when I saw you and Larry King live and I saw how you successfully debated the skeptic while millions were watching, to what do you attribute that success in changing the media's tone, at least on your Larry King's appearance?
Well, it's interesting, you know, because in my short time investigating this phenomenon, I've noticed a big difference. It's the tides are turning. And I can attribute it at one time in particular. I'll never forget this moment. And I'm not sure if I've said this on the radio or not, but we were at a commercial break, and I was on the show, Larry King, with Governor Simington, Sergeant Penniston. We had FAA official John Callahan. We had a satellite feed in with Nick Pope from like Copenhagen.
Right.
And we took a commercial break, and Larry King looked at Governor and myself, and he said, "Wow, this stuff's real, isn't it? This is real. This really happened." And the Governor looked back at him and said, "Yes, it is." And he had this look like, "Wow." It was almost like this epiphany, this realization that here they are at CNN, and I'll never forget that moment. It was like, okay, well, he honestly believes that there's a lot more to this going on, and also behind the scenes, out of the blue, was circulating around all the different CNN headquarters. It was getting passed around like crazy, and I provided them multiple copies. And I remember it was in Washington, in New York, in L.A. And then when I went in, I went into New York and Washington, L.A. place, and I met all the producers and camera guys, and they're all, hey, you know, really enjoyed your movie. Wow, we're so amazed at the credibility and da-da-da-da. And it really, I hate to say this, but I really think that it made a difference out of the blue. I really, and just the culmination of all the different work that people have done out there, and it just... I can honestly tell you that I know that people at CNN are starting to believe that this is real.
And I know I don't know if this is my perception or not, but the only TV personality that I've really seen on his face that he's serious about it and he cares is Larry King. Everybody else, you can see a little bit of skepticism and the giggle factor, but not Larry King.
Well, you know, I went on with, who's the young guy with the silver hair at CNN? Anderson Cooper.
Anderson Cooper, yes.
Anderson Cooper did a pretty good coverage of our event. People can YouTube it, but he was very fair and balanced, and no little grins and those little incredulous looks that you get. And also the other guy, Gary Tuchman, he was defending us, and I've been in touch with him a lot actually lately. He's been defending us, and a lot of times. It's all about ratings, and they'll bring the skeptic in because it's the opposing viewpoint, but it also gets a little bit heated debate, and they like that.
Right.
You know, it works for television, I guess. And although we seem to be having more control over that, but I'll tell you right now, the heads of CNN, when I went down in San Diego and we had that screening of the film, and they're more than open to it. They believe that this stuff's going on and they want to help get this information. I know that. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens in the next couple of years. Especially, I think, if we get, if this film gets some really good mainstream coverage, which I'm anticipating that it will. And I've got a couple of tricks up my sleeve to how to go about doing that. And I've got some really good people in my corner. So we're going to have to see what happens.
Well, that's great. James, let's talk about people of the highest caliber who can talk about the subject. I've had the privilege of interviewing Dr. Edgar Mitchell. Apparently, some of the astronauts say one thing once, and then all of a sudden they change their story. I remember having heard Buzz Aldrin years ago saying one thing, and now he changes his story. I want you to talk about your last effort to contact Buzz Aldrin for an interview while you were both in Monte Carlo.
Yeah, well, he invited me to Monte Carlo for the interview. I wouldn't have gone just to Monte Carlo.
Right.
Excuse me. I'm friends with his sister, who lives in Marin County. Mm-hmm. And also, I worked on a movie set years ago with this guy, Andy Rooney. And Andy Rooney and his wife, Jan Rooney, knew Buzz quite well. This is back in 95, I think, 90, maybe even earlier. And they had told me that, you know, he had shared with them a sighting on the way to the moon as well as a sighting while he was a test pilot. So I've been chasing Buzz Aldrin for years. And his sister also confirmed those things to me. Matter of fact, I celebrated her 80th birthday with her last year. And finally get a response out of him. It must have been 2099, 98, something like this. Mm-hmm. And he agrees to give me an interview, knowing perfectly well what it's all about. But I had to meet him in Monte Carlo. So I borrowed $10,000, got a camera crew together, and flew to the south of France.
Well, why Monte Carlo and not in the United States?
He was on book tour. And
I see.
He said he could do it. He said, "Look, if you want to do it," and I figured I'll strike while the iron's hot before he changes his mind.
Of course.
He said, "If you want to do it, I'm in Monte Carlo on a book tour. We can meet here." So I wasn't going to waste any time. So I went. And he kept putting it off in Monte Carlo. And it was very expensive down there. I mean, I was housing several people, and very expensive. One of the most expensive places on the planet.
Sure.
And so after, like, I think it was day three or day four, I finally said, "Look, you know, with all due respect, sir, I can't wait here all forever." And he said, okay, meet me tomorrow at my hotel lobby. And he told me his hotel, and 10 o'clock, whatever it was, and I went there. No cameras rolling. And I said, no, I won't have any cameras rolling. And we'll meet there. So I get there a little early. I'm having coffee with the crew. And the concierge comes in, Mr. Fox, got a phone call, went out to pick up the phone, and it was him. He said, "I can't do it." And I said, "Well, why is that?" And he said, "Paul Allen has just invested in SETI, and he was labeled a UFO fanatic, and I'm trying to get funding."
Microsoft's Paul Allen?
Exactly.
Okay.
And he was trying to get funding from Congress. This is Buzz Aldrin here. Trying to get funding for Congress to develop a rocket that was going to enable citizens to go into space. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't going to jeopardize that initiative by getting labeled. And how would his story make any difference anyway? And I said, "Sir," I said, "it takes people of your caliber, of your credibility, to come forward to really elevate this whole phenomenon."
Exactly.
And he said, "Oh, I'm not going to do it." So then I didn't talk to him or see him. I was just devastated. I got a photograph of me sitting in the cafe moments afterwards. Which I should put it somewhere in my credits or something. But so next time I see him is going on Larry King Together in 2006 or 2007? I think it was 2007, I believe.
I think it's seven, yeah.
It was 2007. And I'm in the green room, and I'm with Governor Symington, and there he is. And I'm thinking, "My God, there he is." And I was so, you know, it was like the incident had happened yesterday. And, you know, I know he's a very respected, he's an iconic figure and everything else, but still, from one person to the next, he broke his word with me, you know?
You went all the way to Monte Carlo, and he stood you up, basically.
He completely stood me up. I never got an apology or anything. It's like, you know, I know he's this iconic figure, and that's great, and I have tremendous respect for him. But at the same time, I believe in treating others as though you want to be treated, and it's unacceptable.
Exactly.
What I think is unacceptable. He didn't give me any excuse like, "Hey, if I tell you I was threatened or whatever." But no, just got cold feet, put himself first. And so I was going to really lay into him live, and then the governor said, "You know, James, you really can't do that. You know, look who he is, and the end of the moon with Neil Armstrong, blah, blah, blah." And I said, all right, I won't say anything. And I did take a couple little tiny jabs at him, and he started talking about the weather or a magic show, or it was just whatever.
Uh-huh. And then tell him off the record? Did you tell him when the cameras were not rolling?
Yes, and then I said, he goes, "Why don't you go talk to your buddy Edgar Mitchell about it? He seems to be talking." That's what he said to me. oh, your buddy Edgar Mitchell, he's talking. Why don't you go talk to, you know, go join his club, or kind of thing.
Right.
And then I spoke to his sister, and I don't even care. I'm just going to tell you at this point. His sister said,
go ahead.
She said, somebody's gotten to him. She said, somebody's gotten to him. I know it. Somebody's gotten to him. I said, what gives you that impression? She said, he won't even talk to me about it anymore. And I swear on my mother's ashes, that's exactly how it happened.
You know, I've been monitoring this situation for years, basically, ever since Neil Armstrong and the crew came back in, you know, when they came back. But let me ask you this first. If you and I were going to the moon, I would think that would be a big highlight, if not the biggest moment of our lives, don't you think? Would you remember that you were on the moon? How is it that when you ask these astronauts, they don't remember? Thank you very much for listening. We're going to talk more with our special guest in our members section. Head on over to our website, veritasshow.com, click on subscribe, and join us in the members area to tune in to the second part of this great show. We'll take a short break, listen to some music, and we'll be right back with more.